Okay, so welcome to the post-Bereishis, post-Yitzias Mitzrayim portion of the Chabura. This year it's going to go slower because it's a leap year, so it's Truma and Tetzaveh, Vayakel and Pekudei. And Vayikra, instead of taking like 6 weeks, will take 9 weeks or whatever it is. So it will take a little bit longer.
Right, Tetzaveh not together.
So, well, I guess, right, generally they're not, although every once in a while you can get them as a double parsha. Yeah, yeah.
Nope.
Truma Tetzaveh can be, yeah, yeah.
Truma is my mitzvah parsha. I'm laying it 30-something years, no.
I'm going to have to look that up later, but I was pretty sure, like on rare occasion, you can get that. Okay. I could definitely be wrong. But yeah, so it's like the post like story part of the Chabura, but whatever. I was actually thinking this week, like back to the first year of the Chabura when we actually took a break and didn't do Parsha for like this big stretch of time because I was concerned about doing the Chabura. But all right, we've come a while. So I want to share with you tonight two different ideas, one by Rabbi Riskin, one by Rabbi Lam. So Adam Leah Shabbos was very excited, figured like by Tuesday the Chabura was going to all be done, printed notes and everything. 10:30 last night, I was still finishing. But it's an interesting way of looking at the Mishkan. So the Mishkan is very technical. And so you can get very, very turned off if you sit there and you read the Parsha and it's the dimensions and all the minute details. Who really cares? Does it make a difference? The Mishkan's not here. We don't have it. God willing, one day we will have it. Probably we won't be tasked with building it. Someone else will. So what difference does it really make? So the truth is that the Mishkan is rich in symbolism. And what I would like to try to do today is take a deeper look at the Aron specifically, which is the crown jewel of the Mishkan, and try to get a better sense of what the symbolism behind the Aron is. And so we start Vasu Aron Atzei Shitim, Amatayim V'Chetzi Arko, V'ma V'Chetzi Rachbo, V'ma V'Chetzi Komato. So you're going to make an Aron out of Atzei Shitim, out of cedar wood, which is ironic because for those of us that don't read the Psukim carefully and have just looked at the pictures over the years, you're not going to notice that the Aron is made of wood. You're going to say the Aron is made of gold. That's what it looks like. So Rashi points out that the Aron actually was really three boxes. There was an outer box of gold, an inner box of gold, but its base is Atzei Shitim, is wood. Amatayim v'chetzi arko, amav v'chetzi rachbo, amav v'chetzi komato. It is 1.5 is its length, 1.5 is its width, and 1.5 is its, 2.5 is its length, 1.5 is its width and its height. So it is a rectangle. V'tzipiti oto zahav tahor, mibayit mechutz tzapenu, take pure gold and cover it in gold. V'asit alav zer zahav saviv, and make for it a crown, a golden crown on top. And you have to make 4 rings of gold on it. Put it into 4 corners. And 2 rings on each side. And you're going to make 2 wooden badim, 2 wooden poles, which will also be covered in gold. And you're going to bring these badim, right? These poles will go into the tabot, right? Through the rings on the side of the aron in order to carry them. And those, interestingly, the badim will live permanently inside these rings, even though they don't necessarily, right, even though they don't come out, they still need the rings nonetheless, meaning they're permanently there. You might think that it's like in, out, take them out. Nope, they're always there. You put the edut, the luchot, inside it. Okay, so that is the aron. And then you make 2 kruvim of pure gold, Amataim v'chetzi arko, which are 2.5 in length, and ama v'chetzi rachba, and 1.5 in width. That's the kaporet, meaning the kaporet is the cover. Sorry, I think I skipped that pasuk. The kaporet has to be the same size, obviously, to cover it. Vasita shnayim kruvim zahavik shata asotam v'shenk tzor kaporet. And then you make two kruvim, which you're going to put at a pure gold on top, one on each side. These kruvim will be spreading their wings above. And they're covering, right? Their wings will cover the kaporet, and their faces are facing towards each other. You'll put the kaporet, the cover, on top of the aron. And then you put the luchot inside it. And then I will meet with you, I'll speak to you from on top of the kaporet. God's voice comes out from on top of the kaporet between the two kruvim that are on top of the aron. And I'll tell you everything that you need to know. Okay, those are our psukim. Any questions?
It's an awful lot of detail about making a gold box when it seems like he could have just had the luchot covered in gold and be done with it.
Uh-huh. But then I guess you'd have to have the luchot out, right? This is like...
Maybe covered in gold. I mean, the gold is the protective... I'm not actually looking seriously for an alternative to the aron, but it does seem like an awful lot of work to make a golden box, a wooden box that's covered gold both sides, so that you can put the luchot into it.
See, because it's going to be tucked away in a private place. So I mean, I was surprised years ago. I went to Machon HaMikdash, and they have their model of everything there. And the model of the Aron is of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is actually open. And I was like, okay. I mean, I understand why their model of the Kodesh HaKadoshim would be open, because if it's not open, right, it's a complete waste of time. It's not like they're sending the Kohen Gadol in there on Yom Kippur. So, but I asked. I was like, that's so like, or maybe the tour guide said it. He said like, actually, in the Beis HaMikdash, the parochet was open at times, so you could see it, even though I was like shocked when he said that. But like, I don't know, he was far smarter than I was and more knowledgeable. So that would be, if that was the case, then, you know, every once in a while people would have a chance to see it. Again, you couldn't come into the Kodesh if you were in a Kohen, but from a distance you could see. It's like the ultimate like Israeli tour guide thing. On a clear day, you can see into the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the far end of the Azara. But there was like, you could see it. But yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Like of all the Kalim, it might be just as detailed as all the other Kalim. But it's a lot of work to make something that basically you don't really have access to.
Well, they see it when they travel, no? Through the desert.
Sorry, I said to David, this is the first time in 3 weeks I've done this, like 5 o'clock wake up. They did travel with it, but for after the 38 years or so of traveling are up, of which they didn't do that much traveling in the 38 years, it's going to find a permanent resting place first in the Mishkan and then in the Mikdash. But yeah, again, I think, David, your question is a good one. Like, why do we need all the details? Any other questions?
Well, just to tack onto it, you just put it in a box, obviously a respectable box, but like you said, all the detail, all the gold here and the gold there and the kruvim and all that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, why does it have to be such a fancy box on top?
Right. Right. Exactly. The Torah should be, you know, in its purest, simple form, simple box. Right.
Yeah, just to add on to our own commentary, not new commentary. Doesn't serve. It's not itself an important item of importance. The Mizbeach, you name the thing that they build out of gold, and it itself was the apparatus. The Aron, what's that?
It's a vessel.
Yeah, it's a carrying case. It's, you know, the menorah. It's not the thing that was the important thing. We seem to have, I'm not suggesting we shouldn't have done it, but it's not the thing. It's a carrying case, a vessel. It's not the thing that you interact with. Not that you ever, I don't know, did they ever open the Aron to look at the Luchot? I don't.
I mean, if you saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know what happens when they open it up.
I didn't look. I didn't want to, you know. It itself was a carrying
case. Like a time capsule.
I mean, I guess you could, but can you make the same argument with the Mizbeach and even to a lesser extent the menorah? Like, they're also, like, the same way that the Aron is a receptacle to hold the Luchot. So the Mizbeach is simply a receptacle to hold the fire that burns the Korbanos.
I don't see those as parallel. Yeah, I don't see the parallel to the menorah holding the candles or whatever they burn, the oil. That is its function. It is the lamp. It is the sacrificial tabletop.
So just because that's more active, because there's fire and stuff, and so what? So the Shulchan is a vest for holding the lachem upon them. And I don't know if that was any less. That's its function.
And the menorah was also all gold.
Right, but I'm saying, like, the same thing there. Like, obviously you couldn't put oil, like, if you didn't have a cup to hold the oil, like, you're not going to get very far. But you needed something to hold the oil, you needed something to hold the bread, you needed something to hold the korbanos, and for that matter, you needed something to hold the aron. So I don't know. I'm not sure I see that, but...
I hear the parallels. Maybe not identical, but I see them.
Again, it's more of a, like, I hear what you're saying in the sense that, like, it's like the...
It's not something that you're using, like in the... You need to carry these luchot somehow. You know, you need a box to carry it with and a functional way to carry it or somewhat of a respectable way to do it.
Right. I mean, I was going to say it's like an oven versus, like, your storage closet, but it's not really, because it's more like a barbecue, right? Like, yeah, I hear that your barbecue is, you put the coal, right, back in the old days, and you put your coals and you had your little fire thing going on in there. Like, it's a better way to make your barbecue as opposed to, like, trying to find rocks and making a perimeter on the ground and whatever. Versus, like, I have a closet where you store something, maybe even something really, really important. But at the end of the day, the irony is, like, even if, David, even if you are right, the holiest thing in the Beis HaMikdash is the Aron, and its parallel in the Shul is the Aron Kodesh, and the Aron Kodesh is also, right, that is the most holy of everything that we have there. Okay, so I hear, but I still...
There's a lot of detail. A lot of detail.
Right. Okay. I think that's a fair question. Still, is why do we have so much detail?
Right. 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 Oh. Yeah. David's right on that.
Okay. So here are some other questions. Of all the other kalim, none other than the aron and obviously the kaporet, which is the covering for the aron, are all half measures. Amatayim v'chetzi arko. Amav v'chetzi rachbo. Why is it that it's all in half measures? Okay, that's another question. V'asu aron atzei shitim. Why is it v'asu? If you look throughout the rest of the this parsha, it's v'asita. And if you look through most of the Truma Tetzave Vayakel Pekude story, it's v'asita. V'asu aron Vasuli Mikdash Vishachanti Bitocham Vasu Aron Atse Shitim, but generally it's Vyasita. Why is it that it's in plural? So the Al-Sheikh offers an answer. He says that the Keter Torah, the crown of Torah, belongs to everyone. And so you might start to think that, it's the Shulchan belongs only to the Kohanim, only they could eat the bread. The menorah is only the Kohen could light it. But the possession of the Aron, really every single person had ownership to it. That's one possibility. And another answer, which I'd like a little bit more, is the answer of the Pnei Yosef. The Pnei Yosef says that the symbolism of the Mishkan is, or rather of the Aron, is that the Aron is the Asu. It requires two parties to make it happen. You need...
It's also the box itself only we're talking about.
Why?
The cover, because the rest is not. The rest is all singular.
Oh, you're right. So Sita Kaporit Zahav Tahor. Yeah, I hear. Okay.
Well, the direct vessel. I mean, the message is the same. It's the direct vessel itself.
Right. Only right. The kapor is just the cover that might belong to someone else.
It's the pita, you know.
Right. True. Yeah. So he says that you need two parties to make the Torah work. You need both the support financially and you need the support spiritually. It's the Yisachar Zvulun method. And therefore, it's plural to tell us that you need both to make it. I thought that was a great, great answer. Not that I do this often to promote Sfarim. It's an old one. I don't remember how long ago I got it, whether it was like my year in Israel or like further back to my bar mitzvah. But if you're looking for like a... I know it's like really hard because my screen is blurry. Anyway, if you're looking for a great sefer, it's a set of Sfarim Iturei Torah. It's like 7 volumes. Each Dvar Torah on the Parsha is on average like 4 lines in Hebrew, although they do have it in English also. It's like an amazing, amazing set of Sfarim. Lots of really good Torah in there. Got like 4 or 5 different Varts from there. Both the Al-Sheikh and the Pnei Yosef is from there. Okay, so again, we're still stuck with the question, why are the measurements in half? What's the deal with the Kruvim? Right, what are Kruvim? It's another question. What is the symbolism of the spread wings, the Porsei Knafayim? Rabbi Kelemer Zatzal used to speak often when it was a bar mitzvah. One of these parshio, the Porsim Knafayim, is that it's they're heading upward. And he says that he used to say that the message of that was that good chinuch, good parents, they protect the child. That's sochechim bekanfeyim, but it's also reaching upward, right? That's that's the goal, that we want to protect our children, but help them by moving them upwards.
Just another potentially redundant detail is it tells us the dimensions of the cover. Is it obvious what size the cover needs to be if it's a cover?
If it's going to fit it right.
Right. That's a really, really great question. it's almost like, you know, on the one hand, you're talking to people that aren't really builders and artisans, although they did build the pyramids. So, you know, whatever. But okay, so they're not, this is not like their thing. They're not builders. So you want to make sure.
Sal's a pretty bright guy, it turns out, right?
Right. So you want, like, you would think, like, on the one hand, like, you want to give them all the details because you don't want to mess up. But could you imagine if you're like, if you bring in a carpenter, if you bring in a contractor to do work on your house, and you're like, okay, like, guy, we're going to add on a room. Okay, how big is the room? The room is 8x10. Amazing. So he sits there and says, okay, we're going to need walls that are 8x10. We're going to need a roof that's 8x10. You'd be like, you might start getting a little worried. Like, did you think we were going to go with 7x9 on the roof? Like, yeah. It's a really good question. I don't even know where you would start to look for an answer like that. It's like, right, it's not like an Iturei Torah answer, which we're going to find a nice vart about the symbolism of like the matching.
If we weren't, Right. If it wasn't ingrained in all of us that every single word in the Torah is chock full of meaning and there's no superfluous words, then I'd ask the question. But that is drilled into us, so I ask the question. Okay.
All right. No, but you could have. You could have.
Going out on a limb.
Sorry, Mati.
So this is going on a limb, but it's a cover that's the same exact size as the outer dimensions of the box. It's just going to sit on top of it as a cover.
Yeah.
Right? We're not talking like a recessed cover that's going to cover it and stay closed. We're not talking about one that overlaps a little bit so that it's not going to slide out. You know, it's exactly the size of the box so that the box remains that perfect size.
Yeah. I guess what I would say is it's gravity. I was on the roof of a house this past week, and there was like at the very very. It did have a gate. Yeah, every watch. God willing, I hope to that we had Srilly here this week. I hope to host other people here in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Yeah, everybody's got a maka on top of their roof because all the roofs are like are flat and open. So on the very corner of the roof, on top of the maka, there are three slabs of stone. Like just loose. Two of them are like tiles that probably each weigh like 20 pounds. And then there's like a chunk of rock. I don't know where it came from. And I'm up there with this guy and I look at him and there's like a drop. It's not even just a drop. On one side of the house, the drop is like 30 feet from the roof down. On the other side of the house, the drop is like 50 feet down because everything's built in a mountain. So it's looking the other way. And I look at the guy, I'm like, don't you think that's a little dangerous? Like, if that falls, God forbid, you're talking about, like, 30 pounds of stone going down to 50 feet. I don't know. Like, I don't remember, like, the principles of physics so well, but I'm thinking if there's a kid down there, like, it's not going to end well. And he looks at me, he goes, it's not going anywhere. He goes, we don't have those kinds of storms in Israel. That thing weighs so much, like, it's fine. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't know, if I lived here, if I owned that, the very first thing I would do is take that stone and get it off the corner. And he's like, no, it's totally fine. It's like, all right.
We're used to having winds over here that you have to, you got to bring your barbecue grills inside.
I hear that, but I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want to play with that. But maybe that's the thing. Like, when you talk about, like, these two kruvim were not small. So the cover of the box itself probably had decent weight, but with the kruvim weighing what they did, probably it was not going anywhere. Okay, what's the symbolism of the spread wings? So the stay margalit, anybody ever heard of it? Let me know who that is. Suggests something beautiful. It says that if you read the psukim carefully, it says that it's porsim kanfehem sochechim. Right, you have these porsikna final malos sochechim kanfehem. You have them; they're facing up. They're spread out, but at the same time, pneihem isha lachiv. Their wings are looking up, but they are looking towards one another. He says so beautifully that the synthesis of bein adam lechaveiro and bein adam lemakom is what's reflected here. Is that on the one hand, in terms of kedusha, yeah, you're looking upward. That's the way the wings are. But on the other hand, in terms of bein adam lechaveiro, in terms of your friends, they're looking, they're eye to eye looking at each other. And he says that that's so important because we don't believe in Judaism that you're just, you know, this super spiritual being that like doesn't worry about people. We worry about people. And at the same time, we also worry about our levels of spiritual success. And he says that that's similar to the lucho. We have one side that's completely dedicated to bein adam lemakom, but we also have one that's completely dedicated to bein adam lechaveiro. They both equally matter. And then the last question is, why is Hashem choosing this as the place to speak from? Which I don't think we're going to answer that question. Okay, so now let's try to answer our questions. So if you take a look at the second Rashi, Rashi says, kruvim, demut partsuf. It's actually the last line of that Rashi. Demut partsuf tinok lehem. The kruvim had the face of a baby. So you have these two kruvim, these two angels on the Aron, and they look like a baby. Okay? So that's what Rashi over here, that's according to, that's Parsha Truma, that's the kruvim. So where do we have the first kruvim in the Torah?
Gan Eden.
Gan Eden, right? Yeah. Excellent, Steve. So take a look at...
They're guarding the... After Adam and Chava get kicked out, they're guarding the entrance.
Correct.
Yes?
Yep. Excellent. So take a look at the next source. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Hein Adam HaYakachavin Odato V'ra. Adam and Chava just ate from the fruit. They were punished. And God says, Oive, man is going to be like one of us to know the difference between good and bad. V'ata pen yishtach yado v'lakach gam eitz ha'chayim v'chal v'chay li'olam. Oive, what could happen? He's going to eat from the eitz ha'chayim and then it's all over. God sends him out of Gan Eden to work the land on the outside. God chases man out. He lives to the east of Gan Eden. And he puts Kruvim with revolving sword by the entrance to the Eitz HaChayim. So those are Kruvim. So Rashi says, what are these kruvim? Malachei Chabala. They are angels of destruction. So the question is, which one is it? Are kruvim dmut parts of tinok? Are they children or are they malachei Chabala? Now, anybody that's ever taught will tell you that there is no contradiction necessarily between the two. You have children who have dmut parts of tinok. They have the sweetest, most beautiful faces in the world. And yet, they are Malachei Chabala. I taught many a class that was not so easy. And despite that, I stayed in Jewish education for 20 years. And what I always found, my first year, I actually felt that 90% of my students were Malachei Chabala. But as my years went on, I felt that my students were Malachim. They were really sweet angels until there was a sub. And I would always ask the sub afterwards, like, how were they? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm like, that kid is an angel. And the sub would be an angel of destruction. And I'm like, okay. But yeah, so there's no real contradiction necessarily. You could be an angel and a child all one and the same. But what are we supposed to make of the two pieces of this? So, right, how do we reconcile them? So I want to offer four answers. And hopefully one of the four answers will sit well with you and will give you a point to feel that the Aron has some really deep symbolism to you. So the first answer is by Rabbi Riskin. Rabbi Riskin says that children can either be hofchei cherev, they could be people that spin the sword, or they could be kulo kadosh, the kruvim on top of the Aron. It really depends where you put them. If you put them outside of Gan Eden and they don't have anything spiritually connected to, so they become, unfortunately, hofchei cherev. They become not what we want them to be. But if you put them in a place like the Kodesh HaKadoshim on top of the Aron and you put them in a really special place, then what's going to end up happening is they are going to be kulo kadosh. And so it is a very valuable lesson that we have to try our best to put our children in a place that they can be most successful. Sadly, we all know that even if we put all of our efforts and we put our children in the holiest of places, there is still no guarantee. They could still turn out in a way that is not kulo kadosh. But at least we're giving children the best opportunity for success. Rabbi Riskin does point out that you see it nowadays where unfortunately, and that article is probably written years ago, but children have such exposure to so many things that they become hofchei cherev just by the exposure of everything that they see. I remember like one of the big debates after 9/11 in the Jewish educational circles were, can we show the kids like the video of this stuff, or are we not supposed to? And I was way too low on the totem pole on 9/11 to even be part of that conversation other than to listen. But certainly over the years, there have been a lot of things that have come up where you're talking about like devastating tragedies where we debate, do we let the kids, do we not let the kids see it? And the truth is, you only have to look at the video games that they play. They are so much more graphic and so much more violent than anything that happens in the real world. So that unfortunately is where children are, and that's why it's so much easier to be hovchei cherev. That's one answer. The second answer is based on the second to last set of sources on the page. The Gemara in Shabbos says, "Ein olam itkayem elo b'shvil hevel tinoko chobet rabban." Why is there is the world still here? Right, the world is not a great place. Why does God keep it? God keeps the world because of the hevel, literally the air that comes out of the mouth of children. It's the air, the words that they say of Torah is why we're still around. Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, not Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, not the YU Rav Soloveitchik, but the Brisker Rav Soloveitchik. He said children are shomrim of Torah. The children are, the kruvim are, that the children keep after and watch the Torah. So he says, on the one hand, how do we reconcile the medrash of the kruvim? The kruvim are, on the one hand, they're the young children of Torah, the kids. But on the other hand, he points out that talmidei chachamim at the highest level, when you meet like some of the gedolim, there is a youthful, inquisitive nature and excitement and curiosity that they have. And so he says, just as much as it's that the kruvim are children, they're also the talmidei chachamim who watch over the Torah. My favorite vort, nar hayiti gam zakanti. Nar hayiti, I was a child, gam zakanti, and also I became old. It doesn't make any sense. It's nar hayiti vizakanti. That's what it should be. The Pasuk in Tehillim should write. But what David HaMelech is saying to us is nar hayiti, that even when you become zakanti, you have to maintain that nar, that youthfulness and that excitement and that passion. That's the second answer. Third answer, we say in Yom Kippur, in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and the Aseres Me'etshuva davening, Einanu azei panim. We are not azei panim, lomar lefanecha lo chatanu. Something like that, right? I couldn't find it. I didn't have access to Siddur online, so I just typed whatever I remember. Right? We are not brazen enough to say that we didn't sin. And yet, right afterwards, we say, Al-Chei Shechatanu lefanecha ba'azus meitzach. Right? We clap and say, Hashem, we're sorry for being azut meitzach. But at the first part, we're saying we're not azay panim. And then we say we might have been azus meitzach. Are they the same thing? What's the difference? So Rabbi Lam points out that azay panim is to be like chutzpahdik, right? That word that maybe some of us have heard over our lifetime. To be chutzpahdik means that you're completely brazen. There is no redemptive quality to azay panim. So what we're saying is we're not azay panim. But azus meitzach means to be our forehead, right? Our head is a little bit brazen. So Rabbi Lam asks, is that a good thing or a bad thing? So he says, sometimes actually we do need to be azut meitzach. We have to be like that. Why? Because while it might not be completely redemptive, being headstrong, which would be a good translation of azus metzach, is important because that's what holds us together. Why are Jews still here? Because we're stubborn and we refuse to let go of certain things. He says if we use azus metzach to be determined and committed, then it's actually a really good thing. And he quotes Rabbi Nassen Adler, the Rebbe of the Chasam Sofer, who on this point says, do you know why, going back to our first question, why are the dimensions of the Aron in halves? Because it's important that we be a little bit chutzpahdik, but we can only be chutzpahdik when it comes to our relationship with the Aron, our relationship with Torah, if we're doing it in half measures, right? If we're not doing it completely with arrogance. When we're arrogant, that's azay panim. There's no place for that in Torah. But to be determined, to be stubborn, to be a little bit strong-headed, that we're allowed to do that as long as we're doing it in half measures. That's the third answer. And the fourth and final answer is an answer by Rabbi Riskin. that I think is absolutely beautiful. It was personally my favorite answer. Rabbi Riskin says, how do we reconcile the Kruvim of Truma with the Kruvim of Gan Eden? It seems like one of them are so beautiful and the other so not. But he actually says that these angels might be a lot closer to one another than we think. He says in some worlds that we live in, there's such serenity and such peacefulness that Jewish people can be Kruvim, they could be angels, to Mupartzuf Tinok Lahem, with the beautiful countenance of children, like Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik of Brisk says, the Shomrim of the Torah. And those children don't have to worry about anything, they just sit and they learn Torah. And the Talmidei Chachamim and even the grown-ups could possibly be in the same boat. And yet, at other times, they don't find themselves in such serene, peaceful places. They find themselves in much more challenging places, and they need to use the cherev to protect. What are they protecting? The Eitz HaChayim. And what is the Eitz HaChayim? Of course, that's symbolism to the Torah. He says in some scenarios, in some situations, they need to use the cherev to protect the Eitz HaChayim. But unlike Rashi, who says those angels are Malachi Chabala, Rabbi Riskin says those angels that protect the Eitz HaChayim are the purest and the sweetest of all. And he says, just think about Bizmanenu. Think about the battle to protect Eretz Yisrael, to protect Bnei Am Yisrael, to protect Torah Eretz Yisrael. Who is that? Who fights that battle? Who protects it? It's the Jewish, it's the Chayalei Tzahal, the Jewish soldiers of the army. And he says, who are those? They're Dmut Partsuf Tinok. Look at the bus stop on a Sunday morning when those Chayalim go back from home to the army base. They have the face of little children. And yet, what do they find themselves? They find themselves with a Lahat HaCherev, with a revolving sword, but that revolving sword is being used to protect the Derech Eitz HaChayim. He says that we can only hope for a day and age where there are only Kruvim on top of the Aron, but until that day comes, we're so very grateful and so fortunate to having those same Kruvim move themselves to protect each and every one of us so that we have a Lishmor Derech Eitz HaChayim. I thought that was a beautiful, beautiful answer. So hopefully one of the four answers gives you a good and happy understanding of the Kruvim. But I guess to circle back to the first question, David and Mati's, about why is there so much detail here? I think there is a ton of detail here, but there also is so much meaning and so much symbolism. The question is, can we find a lot of that both in the psukim and hopefully in a way that we could relate in our own lives? Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbat.